Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You can still claim your free audiobook when you sign up to a free 1 month trial of the Audible service when you go to audible.co.uk/footballramble. You might choose Pete's favourite audiobook, Bright Lights, Big City by Jay McEnany, or you might choose Luke's favourite audiobook, Digital Fortress by Dan Brown, or one of nearly 60,000 titles. Go and claim your free audiobook at audible.co.uk/footballramble now.
Ramble is law, you are crime. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus and I've got my three pals with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Hello.
And Luke.
All right.
Yes, I am. Now, there's a big talk about Gareth Bale and Luis Suarez being divey divers. Well, I'm going to ask you to tell us a memorable piece of simulation from the annals of time. Jim.
I'm going to go with a classic dive. For me, I think this is where I first learned what diving was. It's Jürgen Klinsmann, Italia 90, against Argentina. He got the defender sent off, didn't he? Because he properly
went over. In the final as well.
Yeah. The Klinsmann dive was a thing we all did in the playground, either to take the piss or just cheat. Yeah. And because it was like a proper swan dive, wasn't it? It was so over the top. But I don't think people had seen the like.
Well, it was the flicker, wasn't it? He went over, was it Pedro Monzon? And he jumped over him, and that was the original dive. And then as he's rolling, he then flicks himself in the air.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Which is unbelievable.
The referee, hook, line and sinker.
Yeah, the look on Mondon's face as well is incredible.
Oh, God! No. Argentina had another man sent off, didn't they?
Argentina were, disciplinary-wise, absolutely appalling.
Well, to be fair, in the first game, they're on the receiving end.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. That true,
yeah. And I think... who was it? Curler. Did he dive for the penalty? It was a bit of a soft penalty.
The penalty was definitely not a penalty as well.
Because there's a bit of a rivalry between those two those two finals, 86 and 90. A strong start.
Well
Italia
done, Jim.
90. Pete, what have you got for us?
I'm going to go for Stephen Taylor against when he went down as if he'd been shot.
Willem Dafoe.
Excellent.
But he really, it was genuinely like he'd been shot, like he was in an audition for a movie.
Well, were you convinced that he actually was hurt when you saw it?
Yeah, at first I thought, bloody hell. Because that's the same game that Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer beat each other up, so I thought maybe one of them
what a game.
Found a weapon and it had all gone off even more.
Well, Lee Bowyer's face in that game alone, amazing.
It was like a clenched fist, as he once said. Yeah. Yeah, good one, Pete. Good one. Stephen Taylor getting shot by a football. Luke?
I'm going to go for, there's a game last season, Twente versus Ajax.
Yeah.
This guy called Peter Viskelhoff, he's a midfield player. I think he was the captain at the time. He took a really bad touch on the halfway line. The ball's about to go away for a throw-in. And there's a defender, or a midfield player, sort of near him. So he sort of tries to dive, but halfway through thinks it's probably a bad thing to do. So tucks up his knees under him. So it looks like he's trying to jump on the back of like an imaginary horse. Just hits the deck and like looks around really, really sheepishly. That's my one. That's
very good. I like that.
And I like the one for when the Duisburg manager headbutted the player.
Oh, they both went down.
And he went down. Yeah, but the player went down like a little bit after him. Thought I'd better go down here. Just cover my back.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've got a couple. I was you've just reminded me of another one actually. I was gonna say Dida for Milan.
Oh yeah.
At Celtic Park. When the fan came on and patted him on the chest as if to say thanks for the goal, mate, you know. Yeah. And he went down like he'd been sledgehammered. Yeah. But actually I'm not gonna say
they are tough, Scots, though, so probably would have been quite sore.
Especially those Glaswegians.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go for Jens Lehmann and Didier Drogba.
Ah, that's brilliant.
That was good. That was doubly embarrassing, wasn't it?
That's right.
There was no dignity anywhere near the pitch that night.
It was a great one.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it's one with the points.
Honourable mention to one. We have a little thing about this on the website at the moment, thefootballrealm.com. There's some of the great dives throughout history. There's one which is just phenomenal. It's from Ecuador versus Chile. Under-20s game. The guy's name is Brian Carrasco. And
quite recent, this.
Yeah, he basically, there's a defender on him, and he grabs the defender's hand, hits himself in the face with it, and goes over. It's incredible.
That's a lovely bit of work.
It's diving 2.0, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
You're actually simulating the reasons for the dive. I like that. He's taking it one step further. Yeah. That's won him the points.
Yeah, true. I think, yeah. He certainly has. Certainly has. Well, let's move on to the Premier League. And Liverpool versus Stoke, that was where one of these dives happened, Luis Suarez. Mm. And it's a funny one. Two teams, you know, Liverpool have got a diver in their ranks, one could argue. And Stoke, traditionally a bit dirty.
Well, yeah. Robert Huth, just stepped on Suarez, didn't he? He's escaped punishment for that. I don't see how that's not a foul or not some sort of, you know, offence.
I seem to recall Tony Pulis falling out with the Gillingham chairman, so
good, like it.
Connected.
You can have it.
Yeah.
Pulis was very full of praise for Glenn Johnson, wasn't he, after the game, because there was a particular tackle he went up for where both he and I think possibly Ryan Shawcross went up for the ball. They both sort of ended up on the deck and just got on with it. It was like, yeah, it was a proper old fashioned challenge. It was really nice to see that. I went up to him afterwards and said, well done, you did well. It's like, alright, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, calm
stop
down.
Being so manly. Yeah. Granite snowman.
I remember in the post production interview for that game, Tony Pulis makes a little bit of a mensch about Luis Suarez, and he's like quite intense with his eyes, and the interviewer, I forget who it was, might be Jonathan Pearce, says, oh, would you want to expand on that? And I was like, don't ask him that. He's like, off on one here. He's taking this baseball cap off of your headbutt.
Yeah.
It was a comedy dive though, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's a ridiculous dive from Suarez. He's doing it so much, it seems like we're saying this every week.
Yeah, well, we are.
Because he's doing it everywhere.
Well, with split-second decisions, if that's something you've got in your arsenal, so to speak, that's something that's going to come up again and again, I suppose. He just needs to stop doing it.
It was a double dive, wasn't it?
For it, yeah.
But the Bale one was ridiculous as well. In both cases, there were clear attempts to con the referee and just cheat, and I don't know why they're not getting booked for that.
But Bale says that he runs at such pace that sometimes he's literally trying to get out of the way of things. And I think to defend Bale, he didn't really appeal. And he also did look like he thought Guzan was going to take a massive lump out of him. So I can sort of understand why the thought process was there.
I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? When you do run at such pace, like some of us do.
Faster than your eyes. Yeah. Faster than light.
Faster than your own feet.
I'd imagine
that has ears pinned back as well, as revealed exclusively on the Football Ramble ahead of everyone else. That's so maybe that makes him even faster.
Yeah, that is very true. I would have thought someone like Gareth Bale, when he runs and he sees a sort of 70-30, 60-40, whatever it was, in his favour, that, you know, a lot of players, they say they anticipate a foul coming, and they kind of go down before that foul. But like you say, if that foul doesn't come, then it's a dive.
I don't know. For me, it looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, sure. In that circumstance, yeah. I mean,
as you said before, a lot of the time he's like a chimp in a minefield. Isn't he? He's just all over the place.
It was a shocking dive. He should have got booked. I suppose it's a different shade of,
because, you know, we seem to, more than any other season, we seem to be talking about this constantly. The rules are already there, the referees can enforce them, but they're not doing it. Why are they not booking players? They've got everything on their side to do it.
It's a tricky one for the ref though, isn't it? Because if, you know, sometimes a little collision and someone falls over, it's not quite a dive. Did they get the ball? This and that. It does open a bit of a can of worms.
Yes, that is the case, but they never seem to book them.
You know, I don't think, but some people will say to you, if it's not a penalty, it's a dive and they should be booked, which isn't true.
No, that's not true.
So, but in those clear, Jim's right, in those clear cases, they should be. And sometimes it looks like the dive is so poor that the referee doesn't even really want to be associated with it.
I think the case should be, if it's a clear attempt to cheat, if it's clear, then it's got to be a
book. But therefore, I mean, Suarez, when he appeals like that, that should be the green light to the referee to give him a booking.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's basically saying, no, that was a foul.
Because he's appealed for it.
Yeah, exactly. And so the referee thinks, well, hang on a minute, I don't think it was.
But why has there been more commentaries and more talk about Suarez diving, which is essentially ludicrous but harmless, and there's not really been much talking about Huth, which is dangerous.
Yeah. I completely agree with that.
I didn't think what Huth did was as bad as people were making out, because I read a lot about it before I actually saw it. It wasn't like malicious, like with a lot of intent. He's almost like I'm not defending it, but it's almost like he just didn't move his foot out of the way, sort of thing.
He meant
more dangerous than a dive.
Of course it is. I mean, if you were to be on the football pitch, what would you rather, someone dive against you or stamped on you? It's a no-brainer, you know.
I prefer someone to stamp me, then dive, and then get a penalty against me.
What do you reckon, Pete? The stamp or the dive? Which one's going to come out on top?
Stive.
That is brutal.
Very fond of that.
Mark Schwartz did an amazing one as well. Jason Puncheon sort of almost like just backed his bum into him.
Yeah.
He just went over.
That was a funny one, wasn't it? Yeah, goalkeepers get all the decisions, didn't they?
Anyway, Liverpool haven't really set the world on fire. They had a really good result last weekend, and I sort of thought that might kick him on a bit. But Stoke were a tough team.
They just looked a bit sloppy. Rayner again, his distribution was really, really poor. Yeah. Something up with him.
Yeah. Manchester United had a good result against Newcastle United. Peter 3-0.
They did. It was really disappointing. I thought the first two goals really, really sloppy defending. Mm. There seemed to be some sort of argument between Tiote and Jonas about who was going to pick up a couple of the players. But yeah, De Gea was flapping everything. Proper mid-90s David James kind of flapping.
Two-man computer game.
Up or not on Mario Kart.
Yeah, and we didn't we really, really didn't exploit that. But yeah, they looked really, really good for it, to be honest.
I thought Evans and Ferdinand were decent. Because I mean, they're a real handful, Newcastle forward line.
Yeah.
Especially physically as well.
Yeah, we pinned them back quite a lot, and I think it was just down to the fact that, you know, we had defenders out and they didn't, to be honest. There's no reason why Shane Ferguson should necessarily be playing in such a match. He's only 21, I think. Got slightly better players, even though he played fantastic.
Don't be too down about it, Pete.
Pete, how annoyed would you have been if RVP had damaged Kabay's face with that sharp elbow?
I think we were in our hearts and our mouths at that point.
It was like, lost to the game,
it was
it?
Like a man swinging a lump hammer near the Elgin Marbles or something. But he probably gives a look, and then does, because he had an argument with Tim Krull last year.
Krull was in the stands watching on.
He was, yeah.
It wasn't quite an elbow, was it? It was like a flapping just arm.
Yeah. It was nice to see Krull sort of covering his mouth as well, because people could understand what he was saying, going, oh, that RVP is such a
nut. Referees always do that, don't they?
Yeah.
When they're talking to long, they put their hand over their mouth, in case it's lip red.
Yes, that's right.
Because Tom Cleverley, apparently, according to the Match of the Day, when they came over to celebrate his goal, they said, he mouthed, oh, there's no way I meant that. The man Percy come over.
That's right.
Yeah, so
yeah, yeah. It's a dangerous one. Or you can just get Ashley Cole to stand in front of you. to stop people lip reading you. it was good to see journalist Henry Winter swim the Times.
Did he actually do it? He did.
Fair play to him.
Made a lot of money.
Because he said if Newcastle give Alan Pardew a long term deal, I'll swim the Times.
Did Mike actually do it just because he wanted to see him do that?
I wouldn't put it past the big fat man.
Talking about Henry Winter.
He must be in good shape if he could swim the Times.
Oh, fair play to him.
Do you know what? You saying that it all suddenly makes sense now, doesn't it? The 8-year deal, Pardew. Pete, he said that, didn't he? This will be a laugh.
I imagine that's something you've been tempted to do in your drunken state.
The rivers of England are not known for their cleanliness, I imagine. No. You might be losing a few pounds after this.
But he was greeted with a Newcastle towel and a little note from Pardew saying, fair play, you'll get a good reception when you come into the club and all this sort of stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Don't be sick on the carpet.
This sounds a bit too much positive football news for me. Can we bring this round?
Okay.
Where's
no,
Gigi.
Just the place.
Right, we're off to Stamford Bridge. they beat Norwich City 4-1.
But that's exceptional as well.
They were. Chelsea have been very good, and they march on. They're top, and they're looking very, very good indeed.
The Hazard goal for me was a highlight, because the Norwich fan behind the goal, did you see him? he was leaning on the sponsorship board.
Yeah.
It's a great goal. It's a good finish, and he sort of like looked around, put his hands up in the air, and just sort of went, I don't believe that. He's really, really annoyed.
I can't remember which game it was now, but there was a fan just behind the goal, and it flashed up for a second, and he was wearing like a motorcycle helmet.
What?
Yeah, it just flashed up for just a second. I can't bloody remember. We just reminded me of it there. But yeah, Chelsea looked very good. But let's talk about John Terry and Ashley Cole. Being silly boys. Well, John Terry's been... Well, they've been silly boys for a while, but Ashley Cole tweeting about the FA.
I absolutely love it. You're seeing headlines about something so serious. You know, it's descended into Cole forced to apologise for calling FA bunch of twats on internet.
It's still very
childish.
Dignified, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It's a tweet.
Yeah.
The Twitter thing is coming up over and over again as well.
Get players off Twitter.
Or at least teach them how to speak.
Keep players on Twitter.
They've got to be allowed to be humans. You know, we all find it so deeply boring when players have been sort of too well media trained that they speak without actually saying anything. So
if someone like Jimmy Bullard went, boobies on Twitter, we'd all laugh. But if Cole uses a foul bit of language towards the FA, it's somehow...
See, I don't.
He's not allowed his freedom of speech.
Yeah.
In the same way that John Terry displayed his freedom
of speech. Is that freedom of speech? Yeah.
But the whole point being that obviously the FA published their report and said that, in quotes, Ashley Cole, it's a really, really polite way of putting it, like a Darwinian way of putting it, he evolved his evidence.
Yeah.
Like in the way what, he got sort of more intelligent and more diverse over time. No, it was, he changed his, he lied basically. He changed what he said.
What was the word they used about Terry's defence, his defence, which
something
could
like,
be applied to his actual defence?
Wasn't it something
slow,
like
lumbering,
yeah. quick to ground.
unlikely and two or three other things. Yeah.
Unlikely to be effective against her, yeah.
And he left the courtroom with dirty shorts. should Ashley Cole, I mean, people are saying, he shouldn't play for England again. It would
the Guardian wrote a really big piece on, like, them two, how they should never play football again.
Well, Henry Winter himself, a stinging attack.
Mm. But obviously the Chelsea and the England things are slightly different issues. But, I mean, realistically, if Chelsea put themselves out there, as they do, as I've seen them do, in the ground and, you know, in their literature and stuff, as being a zero tolerance club when it comes to racism. Mm. I mean, you know, I don't want to sort of be tub thumping and get the pitchforks out or anything, but they've got a decision to make. If John Terry decides not to appeal that thing and he accepts the verdict and pays the fine and serves the ban, you know, effectively accepts his guilt, then Chelsea are facing down the prospect of having a racist convicted
captain,
racism,
leader and legend.
Well, so they've got to do something about it.
And to be quite frank, what they're going to lose, John Terry in not the best form, in the best time of his career. So, you know,
he's a very important player for them. Come on,
But what I'm saying is that, you know,
he's not 23, is he? You know,
exactly. If they were ever going to make a decision, it would be at this point in his career, not when he's 27, 28.
I think the FA, I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think the FA could have made a real statement, and even though Terry has preempted the England thing by retiring, there's nothing to stop the FA saying, well, he's banned anyway.
Mm.
We're banning him for life anyway.
Yeah.
And they can at least wrestle the control back. Say, look, this is unacceptable. We're trying to show racism, the red card, all those other cliches. Mm. We don't care that he's pulled himself out of England contention. We're banning him anyway. So even when there's a massive, maybe it's in a year's time, and we have five injured centre backs, and there's talk of trying to get him out of retirement, he's banned. He's not available for selection anymore. And the same with Ashley Cole. If Ashley Cole's got, I don't know if this is the case, the report's about 60 odd pages long, but I've not read it all, but if Ashley Cole is deliberately misleading an FA inquiry into racism, he should also be banned. It's a privilege to play for your country, not a right. He's the best left back in the country, so what? Doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. Doesn't mean anything at all. They should make a statement and really take the chance to do something for the good of the game, you know.
Leighton Baines thinks he should be banned as
well. He's got a lovely penalty. Lovely penalty, that's what I'm saying. Read between the lines.
Do you want Baines? Yeah. He can bloody take a penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you reckon it was Ryan Bertrand that evolved the state?
Yeah, he chopped it in there.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea, never a dull moment at the bridge.
But, I mean, this is a football show at the end of the day, and it's worth saying that they're playing excellently on the pitch.
Just to remind you.
Oh, they are playing very well.
They're
flying.
Fantastically well,
they've got to be considered title contenders. With the personnel they've got, the start they've had, they've got to be.
Also, Torres is firing. 6 goals already this season. You know, he's had a couple of chances where, you know, he missed a chance early on, and last season his head would have gone down. This time, he just didn't let it bother him. He got on with it. He got his goal. He was involved. Tried an overhead kick, you know, in the build-up to Lampard's goal. It's just, those are the sort of things he wasn't doing a year
ago. Also, another thing in their favour, got a lot of players who've already won the league. Last month or two of the season, what's expected of
them. They don't have a defensive midfielder of high quality, really, did they? I mean, Mikel.
Arsene Wenger did a really interesting. Well, there was an interview with Arsene Wenger where he says a couple of really interesting things, and it was around the Arteta role.
Yeah.
And saying that he doesn't know if defensive midfield players of that nature are that important anymore.
At that level. There's certainly arguments to be made.
Well, Pirlo fills that role without being that player.
Hmm. Well, it's not like Xavi Alonso. He's not. You wouldn't say.
I was about to say, if you look at the best sides in the world, I mean Barcelona and Real Madrid, which of course we'll come to later, they don't have a traditional stopper in there.
No.
And
it's not important.
Arsenal, you could argue. I mean, I wouldn't say
with Song going. Yeah. Song was never really a properly defensive midfielder anyway. I think he was just big, and people sort of made that mistake because he would just, you know, bomb up the pitch all the time. He's always getting involved.
Manchester
in
United.
Man City let De Jong go as well.
Yeah.
No, those. I mean, Van Bommel
as well. He's a box to box, isn't he?
Yeah,
it's one of those sort of token players that the football fan in the stands wants to see, like, you know, your lead boy is
your
central defender, so bite your leg kind of central defender. But they've just moved up the pitch slightly
because he plays for everything and everything in its place. I think almost because
the Makélélé was so successful in the Makélélé role. It was defined as
a
role
hangover from that.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily have to apply in every system.
Well, Pete's absolutely right. If you go and watch a game in England, as soon as someone puts a big tackle in, everyone's like, "Ray!" they love
Tony
a bit of that.
Pulis is on there shaking hands.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
When there's a dive, boo.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's go on to Wigan 2, Everton 2. The Toffees drop points. They're 5 points off Chelsea now. I mean, still had a great start to the season.
The fact that you're saying that, it means they've had a good start to the season.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, but it is a shame for Everton that they dropped the points. Not for Wigan, of course. It was a decent point.
Wigan played very well.
Yeah.
Well, big Kone. Big Kone.
Oh,
he's made a huge difference.
Yeah. He's having a good time. But Everton, I mean, that... How do we see them going? We didn't speak about them last week.
Well, this is going to happen sooner or later. You know, they've still got quite a small squad, haven't they? Away at Wigan, you know, Wigan are obviously picking up. They did play well. They're not going to win the league, are they? It's just about them hanging in there for as long as they can. And they did drop points. They didn't lose. You know, they're still playing very well. Maybe I don't know. Maybe the pressure's getting to them a bit.
They've got a lot of teams. Wigan is a funny one because they've got a lot. They didn't ask about Wigan, you asked about Everton. But Wigan have got teams below them who are, in my view, are worse than them. So they need to pick up points wherever they can, not be beaten in their home games. And I think they might be all right because as soon as the end of February ticks around, they just win every game going.
That's
so,
right. Yeah.
You just got to make sure they're still in touch, really. But Everton have. Last time Everton sort of started this well would have been the season they came fourth. And so they've got a big thing to live up to. But again, their squad's probably not the biggest. It may start to take its toll, especially around Christmas. Mm-hmm. I don't know what fixtures they've got over Christmas, actually, but that'll be a big sort of time of the season for them.
Moyes made an interesting point recently talking about the start they had when they finished fourth. He said even then, you know, they were a team where they would grind out results and they were built on hard work. But now you expect goals from Everton. There's goals in that side all over it. And yeah, there is. And so it's a very, very different animal from that team that we're referencing back to.
They seem to have a lot more wide players now as well. Seem to play a lot more width from what I've seen as well.
Arsenal, fantastic away win at West Ham. But the game got going with a lovely one from Diarmi. Fantastic finish.
He's got Michael Jackson finger tape as well.
Has he?
Diarmi's a weird one. He threatens to do that and then messes up the finish quite a lot.
So that was a great fin though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was brilliant.
What about Giroud's finish?
I thought it was a really, really, really good finish. A really good game of football as well. I thought, for once, oh, West Ham have got something, you know, a match that can sort of hang their hat on. Maybe they might go ahead and win this, but they just didn't.
I loved the Giroud goal because it was a real, and Marcus, as a man who's played up front in the past yourself, not at that level, but you didn't like the fact that he picked the ball up, gave it out wide, carried on his run, and didn't really break his stride for the finish. It's a real textbook striker.
Yeah. Well, and the delivery
from Podolski was exceptional as well. It did all the work for Giroud in a way in terms of the actual pace on the ball. And you know, Giroud did exceptionally well to get in there and knock that in.
It was a goal of a confidence striker as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll need that. I mean, because you know, when you're in a position where you haven't scored in the league for a while, and it's, you know, you've just started at the club, every time you don't score, you know, it's seen as a big problem. If Podolski, you know, gets in a position and it's blocked on the line or it's blocked by a defender, everyone's like, "Oh, it's Podolski, he's getting in amongst it again, he's been brilliant so far." Up until then, if Giroud did it, it was like, "Oh, he's missing everything." You know, even though it's the same situation,
the narrative is attached to it, yeah,
completely. So that pressure is gone from Giroud now, and he set up Theo Walcott as well for his goal.
Walcott came on and changed the game, didn't
he? Walcott has stepped up, hasn't he? You know, he said to Wenger, "I want to play out front." He's scoring goals. I think he's got four this season. Yeah. I'm not sure if he started the game.
I was going to say
Cazorla's goals are beautiful as well.
Cazorla, yeah, fantastic.
What a player he is.
Yeah. What was so nice in the post-match interview when Wenger was asked about Cazorla, he smiled and went, "Oh, he's fantastic to watch, isn't he?" And all this, and I was like, "There you are. See, you go buy someone.
He loves it. You've had a lovely time."
John Motson said something about how, you know, I'm not going to compare him to Fabregas, but it's like you've unearthed another gem. Yeah, a gem who's just won the Euros. Unearthed that obscure footballing backwater that is La Liga.
I mean, at the end of last season, we said, well, a few of us said that he's the best player in Spain outside the top two teams.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's carrying on to prove that.
Isn't the 08 Euro squad as well?
He's gone from a very different footballing culture. Never played football outside of Spain, as far as I know.
Slotted
straight in there. A lot faster, a lot more, probably a lot more physical as a league, and it's not affected him anyway.
It probably helps that, you know, Arsenal playing the way they do, but he did say, Wenger as well, that he's the most two-footed player he's seen since Glenn Hoddle when he had him at Monaco, which is interesting.
Really?
That's a huge shout, especially given that he had Thierry Henry at both clubs for so long.
expect a single coming out.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think he'd say the most two-footed player since Davel Suka. You know, yeah. If indeed Davel Suka was there under Wenger, I think maybe
he was, yeah.
Yeah. Another side we've got to mention before we move on from the Premier League is West Brom. Mm. What a start they've had.
Cracking game.
Not only have they got a brilliant record at home, they have been magnificent.
Yeah.
One of the goals they scored against QPR was so good.
I know, well, yeah.
So good.
It really was. I mean, Tarrat was there to get a good
one. Oh, that was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think
Granero's
goal, Tarrat's goal, and I think it was Malumbu, was the last West Brom goal, wasn't it? Which was super.
I love Granero's goal, the pirate. One thing that's worth pointing out is that now QPR are officially one game away from the Redknapp bat signal being chucked up. 2 points from 8 games if they lose the next game.
Do you reckon Redknapp would go there?
It's a massive droopy the dog bat signal going up in the clouds.
To be fair,
he's already had a vote of confidence from Tony Fernandez, the dreaded vote of confidence.
He's also had a shed load of offers from abroad, according to him. Yeah.
They play Everton.
That's what Redknapp says.
They play Everton next week, which will probably get beat, I think. Then there'll be 2 points from 8 games. Redknapp gets in his car, gets his tool belt on, winds his window down, just turns up Loftus Road. Get me in.
drives down to Sky. Just with the window open, driving round till a reporter comes out.
QPR, no, I've not heard anything about it. What?
he won't have to drive around very long.
Sorry, is that Loftus Road in your sat nav? No. It's a terrific sat nav, but it's not.
It's Marchandra. She always wants to go there. To be fair, though, he'd get them out of trouble.
Of course he would.
Yeah. Hughes has got them in trouble. With Hughes, I mean, it's a funny one. When he had a good season at Fulham, lest we forget.
Yeah.
And then he was like,
he was a massive dick.
Yeah, he was. A huge. Even Al Fayed couldn't believe it. You know, if he can't, then Al Fayed.
Out dick the dick master.
He was like, hang on.
Yeah, it's my job.
Yeah, this is my office. how are you getting on with that Jackson statue? And he said. Hughes sort of said, no, a new challenge and all the rest of it, and then goes about a mile up the road, and then he's not having a good time. Where's he going to go next? He's still in the job, sorry. I'm being all Sky Sports. I think Aaron Redknapp's...
Back to Blackburn?
Yeah. They'll take it. Well, there's an available
back
one.
Back to Wales.
Well, let's move on to the Championship.
I'll tell you what, they'd have him back at Wales over Coleman.
Yeah, they would.
I'm much sure they would.
Yeah, they would. Well, you mentioned Blackburn. They lost 1-0 at home to Wolves. Blackburn have had a good start, but as soon as Steve Keane goes, well, they lose.
Well, they're down to ninth now.
Yeah.
The fact that they lost, it's a great bit of man management by the board, by as soon as they lost, saying, we might get an insurer in, so you better buck your ideas up, otherwise that's actually happening.
Because this is definitely the time in, you know, Blackburn's existence as a club that they need to take a punt on someone, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like that they've spent nothing over the last few, couple of seasons with Steve Keane. I can't imagine that man was very expensive.
Yeah.
You know, getting insurer in, it'd be like £1 million a day.
£1 million per point, as well as £1 million a day. Yeah, so sure. £1 million a day.
Tim Sherwood would be an all right one, wouldn't he?
I like Philly Solbakken in the manager of Wolves. He's a notable egg.
Yeah.
He looks like a professor.
I mean, is it?
You'd be mental to leave Wolves for Blackburn, though. At the moment.
I'm not saying he's going to go there. I'm just saying that's who they play.
I know. He's. I've no doubt he's very, very, very happy where he is right now. But is it time to get Sven back to the shores of this country?
You need help.
No, they need help. And I know just the man. You can bring both of his ladies over.
It was a nice goal. Sarko's goal was brilliant, by the way.
Nuge update.
He's an absolute quality foreman.
The Nuge scored at Leicester City. 1-2-0. Leicester City, good start to the season. Lots of good starts to the season.
Well, people are touting that Nigel Pearce is going to lose his job, and they're doing really well, Leicester. They're right up there. It's a second or something,
funny, isn't it? Yeah, Cardiff went top with a good win at Ipswich. So,
Did you see DJ Campbell's goal? DJ Campbell?
Wearing five.
Yeah. Was he wearing five as well?
Somebody tweeted us about it.
There's a lot of numbers I don't agree. Coney for Wigan, he's number two, isn't he?
Yeah.
Obviously Dempsey's number two.
DJ Campbell, with two hands, slam dunked the ball into the net.
That's class.
He's got to say something. He's got to pipe up.
I think you should get one a season.
Oh, haven't we, Dave? Get yourself a running.
Yeah, the new signing takes it. Yes, yeah. We're 5-0 up.
Yeah, imagine
you wasted that.
You get one a season, and it gets into the last game to win the league, and you realise you haven't used your one.
Yeah. But either team haven't. Yeah, good. New rules, new FIFA ruling. Let's go to Scotland. We're not going to go to the SPL for obvious reasons. They lost. The Scottish
the SPL lost.
the Scottish third division, where Stirling Albion beat Rangers Newco 1-0. An incredible result. Stirling Albion, they were bottom. Now they're second bottom on goal difference. But the big story there was their player manager Greg McDonald missed out on the big win because he was getting married.
Has there been a more Scottish name than that? Is he isn't his name Greg even spelt the Scottish way as well?
Yeah, it is, yeah, with an I.
His middle name is Sporran. Sporran.
Mook Sporran.
Rangers are Newco, a third in the third division.
They are,
haven't won an away game yet.
Wow, it's tough on the road in the Scottish third division.
Sometimes they don't even have roads.
They're playing on roads.
There's a couple of A roads.
It's a level, though, isn't it, that pitch? It's gravel.
I think last week I said that Berwick Rangers were non-league. They're not non-league, they're in the third.
Someone team. Actually complained about that.
All three of them.
All Berwick Rangers.
Oh dear.
Would you miss it? What do you think of that? He shouldn't be getting married during the season, should he?
Player manager getting married in the game against Rangers.
Yeah.
That's poor. It's poor.
Maybe he wasn't planning on Rangers being in the division, to be fair.
I think that's a fairly safe assumption.
Yeah.
when the wedding was undoubtedly booked.
Yeah, very true.
Oh, he might play Rangers. Oh, yeah, dream on. Grieg.
Grieg. Yeah. Griegy. Right then. Let's go abroad. We got to go to La Liga first, where it was 2-2 in El Clasic. Barcelona 2, Real Madrid 2 at the Camp Nou. Messi and Ronaldo with doubles. It just doesn't let you down, that fixture,
no,
does it?
No, it really doesn't. It was really heated as well.
Yeah, it was.
And the goals, like the Messi's goal was first goal. He had to stutter to get that in. It looked like almost tapping at first. It really, really
the
was.
The way he shuffled his feet
so
was
cleverly.
Superb.
And his free kick was immaculate. And Ronaldo's two goals were just brilliant. They both summed themselves up so well in that game. Yeah. They really both delivered.
What I loved about Ronaldo's first is that celebration he does. Just calm down.
Yeah.
Calm down,
everybody. I've got this.
Yeah, it's superb. It really is great.
Or he spares a bit of time to point at himself as well.
Yeah, that's right.
But Messi's first goal, Pepe went into kamikaze mode, didn't he? He threw himself into a tackle with such sort of gusto, it actually looked like a foul. There's only one saw it the second time I realised it wasn't.
Oh, you should have seen, there's a little write-up on was it a little thing on Sky Sports just ahead of the game, and there's this little paragraph about it, and it was going on about two different ideologies, two different teams locked in immortal combat and all this kind of...
It'd be rubbish if it was the two of the same teams playing each other, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it just?
It'd be rubbish.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an excellent game. I thought it really was a Messi Ronaldo show, wasn't it?
But they did kind of revert to type, though, the two sides. After a while, when they realise it's a very close game, one's not getting the better of the other, Real Madrid think, oh yeah, we like to rough you up, and Barcelona go, yeah, you do that, and then we just kind of dive a bit and try and wind you up that way. And when they start doing that,
Pepe's I'll just kick people.
I'll do both.
You realise you're giving me licence.
Yeah. Pepe is the only player perhaps to boot someone and then try and dive in the process. Yeah. You know, on the way down he'll sort of,
Montoya hit the bar late on.
Oh, that would
have been glorious for him.
Yeah,
I love Ronaldo's record in the Clasico is amazing.
Well, Ronaldo is now got the highest goals to minutes ratio of any Real Madrid player ever. He's recently overtaken Alfredo Di Stefano, which is incredible.
He's different.
He's amazing. Any other generation, he'd be the best player in the world by a million miles.
Yeah. Well, also in La Liga, Atletico Madrid beat Malaga 2-1, and they've gone level with Barcelona at Leti. Mm.
Well, Falcao, I mean, speaking of Cristiano Ronaldo, for me, Falcao's the best out-and-out striker in the world.
We'll move on to him in a minute.
Well, his goals to minutes ratio in the league this season is dwarfs even Ronaldo's and Messi's.
Wow.
He cannot stop scoring goals.
He's got
12 goals in 7 games this season.
in the Liga as well. And Malaga are no pushovers as well.
Yeah.
I find it really interesting the way that Atletico...
That's in all competitions, Falcao, not just in the Liga.
He's trying to give Atleti some sort of stupid buffer so that when it undoubtedly goes a bit madder.
They'll be alright
when he leaves for Man City.
Yeah.
I find it really interesting the way Atletico Madrid have constantly managed to replace strikers, because direct like for like
replacements,
they've
had some great ones, haven't they?
Very rarely work. I mean, obviously Falcao was a replacement for Aguero was a replacement for Torres, and each one has been an absolute
Forlan,
of course, as well. It's great. They can manage one thing very well at the expense of everything else they do.
But they still take it.
Yeah.
Europa League, win that a couple of times. I really like Atletico Madrid's kit.
I love the,
I just really like Atletico Madrid. There's just so much entertainment.
I love the white and red stripes and the blue shorts. Paraguay-esque.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Well, they're level
yeah.
on points with Barcelona, you know? Yeah. Could they be the hearts of La Liga? Yeah.
Win the hearts of La Liga. I do hope so. Falcao, though, I mean, not enough can be said about that man. Not only is he physically tough and strong and all that kind of stuff, he's also got a lovely deft touch, hasn't he?
Well, his goal and his goal against Schalke was a header.
One of those strikers who's just how do you defend against that? He's got it all, you know. And he ripped Chelsea to pieces in the Super Cup as well.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, you can argue Chelsea might not have been that
as well,
fast, but
the thing with he's got to be what, like 50 odd now.
Who?
Falcao?
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah. Oh dear.
I think that in the box he's just so explosive, isn't he? I mean, he's probably one of those strikers that when people play against them, they just never feel safe when he's in the box. They keep, whether it's keeping an eye on him or shepherding him when he's got the ball at his feet, or the keeper's keeping an eye what foot he's going to strike it with. He's got it all, so it's difficult. It's
nuisance quality.
Yeah,
we will talk about another one of the world's greatest strikers in a bit after Serie A. The Milan derby happened on the same night as the Clasico. My goodness, what a treat.
That shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, it shouldn't have to make a decision
on. Well yeah, and there was other couple,
the UN have got to step in on that.
I think so. And Inter won 1-0. Before the game, it was funny, wasn't it? We've talked about Milan, as a lot of people have, with their shortcomings this season, and Ambrosini, the captain, was appealing to fans before the game to buy tickets.
I bet he was thinking, I shouldn't have to be doing this.
I like the quote. It says, "Guys, a derby without you makes no sense." Might not be in that tone,
guys,
but it might be.
Who's bringing the potato salad?
Ambrosini doesn't like the sort of guy who would enjoy a potato salad as well.
He said, "Buy tickets because we can all go together to the stadium to win." Right,
where is he?
Yeah.
Where is he?
He's at the.
He promised he'd be here.
He's at the wheel of the bus.
Should we have one more in here? We'll have one more in here. If he doesn't turn up, I'm going to be annoyed about it.
Take a leaf out of Hodgson's book on the tube.
But they lost 1-0. Big Walter Samuel with the goal. I mean, they did a few chances.
Great fact from Paolo Bandini that Walter Samuel's won every single Milan derby started in.
Ooh,
wow.
Not just undefeated, one.
Oof. My goodness.
1941, the last time Milan lost 4-7 at the start of the season.
Is that right?
Good
great
stat.
Who goes? It just goes to show that selling all your best players isn't that good. It's annoying.
11th.
There was the 11th. What are you talking about? The Prince is still there.
There are some great banners as well.
Was there?
So, Inter did a really intricate banner of all the funny things that happened to Milan in the summer in like cartoon form, followed by a banner that just said, "All right, shit." It's just great stuff.
It's Cassano, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Oh, you're loving that.
Oh my goodness. Oh dear, that is super. Serie A once again, ladies and gentlemen.
Juventus won again.
Well, Juventus did win again.
Steamroller in the whole league.
Beat Siena 2-1. Very picturesque the way Siena Stadium is.
Pirlo with a Pirlo roller.
Under
the wall. You knew the wall's going to jump.
Tucked it under the wall. Yeah. Great stuff.
One of those things, if the wall doesn't jump, it looks dreadful.
Yeah. Marchisio getting the winner.
Yeah, and Antonio Conte's ban's been reduced.
4 months.
Yeah, so I think he's back in December. So they're still undefeated, aren't they? When's the last time we lost a league game?
Oh, it's like they've got to be on what, like 41, 42 now, is it?
Lovely clothing on Shaw in that match as well.
Oh, the Siena manager.
Yeah, I'm going for either.
He looks the biz.
Mafioso golfer or gay butcher. I'm not really sure.
Oh, amalgamation really sure. Between all
two
four.
Two things that go hand in hand.
Well, maybe the gay butchery is a front. You know, could be all of those
he
things.
He was the gay butcher of Italy.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good shout, that. I like that.
It's rare that sponsorship looks good on a kit as well, but I think the Jeep thing is working for Juventus.
Do you think so?
Mm.
I think it could work for the Football Rambles.
Yeah, we're open to offers.
I think Cosmi looks like I think he looks like a sort of MMA coach.
He does look like a bit of a bruiser.
Yeah, like an old boxing coach or something.
A stylish bruiser. Napoli. Keeping up the pace with Juventus. They beat Udinese 2-1. Although slightly worrying news for them, Italian finance police.
Oh, God.
How do you get a job
there? They must
be
busy.
Finance police? How much money are you spending? None of your business. It is my business.
And imagine in Italy, that is an enormous department.
Diego Maradona created that.
Well, they raided Napoli's head office.
Yeah, we're just wondering who's left any of his stuff here. From the 80s.
Those earrings, that's ours.
Yeah.
But Napoli right up there. And Lazio, another good start to the season. Hernanez and Closer. It was all Miroslav Klose, powerful header, and was it a one-on-one? The other one, probably one.
I didn't see that game. Hernandez, probably one in the last minute.
Hernandez scored a free kick from about 30-odd yards out. Absolute beauty.
Klose is just evergreen, isn't he? He's, what, 34, 35?
In the shade.
In the shade. Wet through. He's 35 wet through, Jim, I'm telling you.
Yeah. You know that Big Ronaldo's praying that he doesn't make the next World Cup. Because
yeah,
he will take his record. You know?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, as much as I like Klose, the romantic in me doesn't want him to. Want him to take it at all.
And if he does, then maybe Brazil will get Ronnie out there, big Ron, Ronaldo, as they call him.
You just want it to be about 2002, don't you, Germany?
Ben,
Sol, Ronaldo.
Did you kiss a girl in that year?
Don't be ridiculous.
Turned out it wasn't a girl.
It was Ronaldo.
It's Ronaldinho. He was a surprise.
What a surprise it was.
Well, Klose will be like,
but he certainly lobs semen. Wait, what?
No.
You've got one step too far. Klose will be 36 in the next World Cup. I'm not ruling that out.
Yeah, well, you
what, you're not ruling out that it'll be 36 in the next World Cup?
No,
I think that's easily provable. It's not a great shout.
Oh dear, we must move on to league. Another big game.
We need a jingle for that, really.
I think so.
Listeners.
Whoever. Another big game on the Sunday was Marseille versus Paris Saint-Germain. And it was two apiece. Gignac with two for Marseille and Big Zlatan with two for PSG.
I loved it when Gignac scored his second, I think it was. And he's a bit of a fat lad, isn't he, Gignac? Yeah. Which is brilliant to look
very
at.
Very serious face.
Yeah, but he started going, Ale! When he scored.
I really love that chant. Ale, ale, blow.
Yeah, yeah.
Ale, ale. It's class. Really good. Let's talk about Zlatan for the rest of the show. what a goal, the first one.
That's incredible.
I thought he hit it with his studs at first.
No, it was a proper sort of arrogant karate kick.
He barely moved.
Keller, after he scored that goal, he picked the ball up out of the net. He didn't pick the ball out, but he said, give us the ball, and he ran back to the centre circle with it. It's like, it's 1-1.
I've got a free kick to squeeze in.
Yeah. Lovely free kick as well.
Yeah. I thought the kick could have been better there. It was
pacey.
Good eight for him.
Pacey.
Did you save that?
Not if it was Latin. I'd let it in.
The Marseille manager, another fine bit of clothing, Ellie Bopp. He was wearing like the Marseille blue tracksuit with matching baseball cap. Mm. Oh.
You're the football fashion police.
I really am.
A few managers rocking the baseball cap these days. Pulis, obviously. Jurgen Klopp loves a baseball cap. Yeah. I don't like to see managers wearing baseball caps at games. I think they should be wearing suits.
I think. Well, unless
there's no reason for them to be in sportswear.
No, exactly.
Some of them wear boots.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah.
Who's the man? Zambia coach, who I love.
Oh, Herbert Nard.
What about him with his white shirts on?
He carried one of his injured players onto the pitch to join the celebrations. The stadium might as well have been on fire. And he's rescued it.
Did you know that there's a drug that releases the pressure in your eye called Zlatan?
Is that right? Yeah.
Is that true, yeah?
Well, it's true.
Can you get some in? Do you know anyone?
I've got terrible glaucoma.
Is that right? Yeah, releasing the pressure at a big club. Lorient 1, Lyon 1, 3rd and 4th. Ali Adier on the score sheet.
Lyon yesterday's news, wasn't
it? That is the most French update ever. Lorient 1, Lyon 1, Ali Adier with the goal.
Ale Le Bleu. And we zoom off to the Portuguese League. Another big fixture on Sunday, Porto Sporting. That is a Super Sunday. Not Aston Villa versus West Brom.
No.
That's a Super Sunday. Porto 2, Sporting 0. One of the goals of the weekend.
One of the goals of the season, whatever happens.
Do you think from
now on?
Colombian striker. It's all about Colombian strikers.
Talk of strike, Jim.
Jackson Martinez. Go on, Jim.
Yeah, basically, the ball's lobbed over into the centre, into the box. Looks quite route one at first, but Jackson Martinez has his back to goal, just sort of lets it come near him, back heels it in, not even looking.
But in the air, like a volley
Volleyed back heel in the air.
Zlatan-esque.
Better than Zlatan's.
He's got fantastic sort of chest and bicycle.
He wasn't looking at the goal, how can
about a month ago. He's a really, really talented, technically able player.
He's class, absolutely class. But that goal, it was almost like the ball came into him and he chested it, and then he had his back to goal on, and you're thinking, oh, you've messed that up. Now you're going to have another
defenders think he's going nowhere. Nowhere here.
Well, you're going to have to. You have didn't see that coming.
The goalkeeper's got a look on his face as if to just say, oh, you prick. My wife's watching this.
Oh dear, oh dear. Right, well, that's the end of the European football roundup. But let's quickly go to the FIFA house, if we may. We've left them alone for a bit. They've come in for some criticism, funnily enough, for scheduled kickoff times for the next World Cup in Brazil, because some of the matches will be played early afternoon in the tropical climates of the north of Brazil, and people are saying that's for European television companies, you sods. Interesting to note that Brazil haven't been given any of the kickoff times in the afternoon, just the evening.
Yeah,
strange.
It's a little bit worrying because you want it to be an even playing field if you can. And the thing is, Brazil's such a big country that you know you've got various different climates, haven't you? So it's never going to be. They're never going to be able to please everyone. I mean, if England, whatever happens, England will use it as an excuse, providing they qualify, which they may.
It's nice to know one this far in advance.
Yeah, exactly.
if anything, it's the one thing that's going to probably finish Jack Charlton off, to be honest. Because you remember how furious he was with the heat in World Cup '94. Can you imagine?
Horrendous taste.
What? He's a man of advancing years.
And again, he was wearing a baseball cap in '94 when he did that.
He was,
exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
This all linked in.
Yeah. All fits together.
Da Vinci Code with baseball caps.
I can't get the water to me boys.
Yeah.
I've got to read this out. This is Sepp putting his balls in it again. He was
just dangling his balls in there, just dipping
in
them
the custard, fiddling
around.
Yeah, not even hiding it, doing it around the corner when no one can see.
Just having a little play,
getting on top of the table in the canteen and just dipping his hairy balls in the custard and saying, "What are you going to do about it? Football.
This is what's happening. This is what you're accepting."
Yeah,
I don't even know why there's custard being served.
Next week, I might not want to do this, but for now, I do. So suck on it.
Yeah,
the custard or the balls.
That was the first part of the
custard
quote.
On the balls.
he went on to say, because he's worried about the World Cup preparations in Brazil. And he said, when we came to Africa, the Africans, when they got the World Cup in May 2004, they were dancing during one year. They were just dancing because they got the World Cup. We had to call them and say, please start work. just
I'm
a simple,
fairly sure that didn't happen.
A simple phone call.
Yeah,
that's all it
Who's
took.
He wrong? Just like a random number.
Hello, Africa.
Hello, Africa, get to work. We haven't even got it. It's South Africa you want.
And then he said, in South Korea and Japan, they were so eager to organise the World Cup that they could have done two. In my opinion, it was overdone. Well, what do you want?
They never started dancing.
Effortlessly reinforcing stereotypes all over the world.
I did like what Pele said about the World Cup. He said, the event will not have many problems, but our biggest worry is the administration, airports, construction and hotels. They're all running late.
That's the Michael Owen injury quote. Yeah. All over again. Michael Owen again was injured this weekend,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, of course he was. Right then, that's
Bad luck. He was unlucky this weekend.
Yeah. It is bad luck. Oh, and just before we go, Michel Platini said that he wants the 2022 World Cup in Qatar to be played in the European wintertime. So, ladies and gentlemen, it will be happening in the European wintertime.
Yeah.
I read that Platini quote, and the greatest bit about it was when he said that he voted for Qatar to stage the World Cup in 2020.
That's right, yeah.
Because he had dinner with Nicolas Sarkozy. And Sarkozy apparently... didn't persuade him to vote for him.
No.
But the Qatar ambassador was there at the same time.
The Prime Minister.
That's
Qatar. Can you imagine, like,
the head of the country.
He's like, oh, Carl, am I needed in the kitchen? I'll just leave you two to get acquainted. Oh,
yeah. Don't worry about Sepp, he's just playing with the custard.
It had nothing... it had nothing to do with the decision. So there we are.
We've all been there.
Right, we're back with Pete's game after this.
Good news, Ramblers. We have a betting partner. And our betting partner, William Hill, are offering to match any sporting bet from £10 to £25 when you, a listener to the Football Ramble, open a new William Hill sports account. Go to thefootballramble.com/William Hill to find out more and claim your free bet now.
Pete, give us a game.
I will give you a game, Marcus. Please welcome Noel Whelan's house party.
Nice.
Complete with Mr. Blobby or Wayne Rooney, as his teammates call him.
A cheap one.
Mr. Blobby Solano.
Prepare, gentlemen. I was born in Sutton.
I know where Sutton is. I've been through there.
Yeah.
Stop.
Don't do it.
I'm going to go for Gareth Southgate.
No.
Stop.
It's not Gareth Southgate.
I'm going to go for Jody Morris.
It's not Jody Morris. My middle name is Stanley.
Stop. Al Hajduf.
It's a tough one this week, so yeah.
So listen up.
Hold down, hold tight. I was a midfielder. I featured in a weekly sketch in Match magazine where I would be depicted as a potato or a vicar and many, many other nouns.
Interesting, that. That's a good fact.
Mm, very good fact.
I can't wait to find out who it is now.
I scored twice against Spurs in 10 minutes, but my team still lost the game by 4 goals.
Sorry, say that again. He scored four.
I scored twice against Spurs in 10 minutes, but my team still lost the game by 4 goals.
Football quizzes do not get tougher than this.
I think this is going to test the listeners as well, personally. I had lovely blonde hair, frequently in brill creamed curtains.
Stop. Gary Flitcroft?
No.
Just going on the curtains.
No, that's not the answer.
I have a scary name.
Stop. Peter Fear.
Peter Fear.
Yeah. Oh, top work.
Good. Yeah.
Wow.
There you go. I played for the Crazy Gang. That's it. I am Peter Fear.
Peter Fear. Yeah,
good one, Fear. Good one,
pal. Completely forgot he existed until he said the curtains bit.
My goodness. Right, let's have some correspondence, damn you. Luke, what have you got for us?
All right, everyone. Yeah, I think what I want to do is give you a bit more detail about non-league day. We talked about it a bit last week. I think it's important. We all think it's important.
It is important.
It is obviously very important. It's next weekend. There's a bit more detail based. If you go to nonleagueday.co.uk, that's where you can find out all the information you should need. But a lot of places are doing little ground hops and setting things up for you to make it easier to attend the game. So, for example, there's a Cheshire Conference ground hop. So if you're up in the northwest in that sort of part of England, you can go Macclesfield, Stockport and Hyde. They're all playing the conference. Or Blue Square Premier, as it's now known. And they're staggering their kickoff times and putting coaches on in between the grounds. I think
that's really good.
That's amazing.
That's class, that.
And the coaches, you just ask for a donation. All the money goes to Marie Curie Cancer Care, which is obviously a really noble charity. AFC Telford are doing entry for a fiver for people who've already got season tickets at another club. Frickley AFC are doing the same, but with for free entry.
Well, we have to go to Chelsea after this because this is another positive football
story. Yeah, I know, yeah. And there's all sorts of other things going on, like you can have a weekend ticket for local teams that are in the same area save money. There's free programmes being put out. Yes, that's this weekend, but go to nonleagueday.co.uk to get more information.
Get on it.
Excellent.
Go and see Berwick Rangers.
Any more correspondence?
Yeah, we have a tweet from Twitter. Which was sent to us.
From Twitter itself?
Yeah, Twitter itself.
At
IanMiller84, I think retrospective action is needed on diving. Fourth belly flop from the 10-metre board. Put it on TV, I'd watch.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Agreed, Ian.
Good shout.
Yeah, let's clear that up then.
Do you remember when we talked about how we're going to sort out whether the ball's over the line or not? And Pete said they should make a water thing behind the line. So the ball went over it. I thought that was a really good idea.
Why didn't anybody go for that? I lobbied.
Because you only said it on here, I think.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Probably not influencing the game.
Don't do half a job.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. Ooh, yeah. And we have the enigmatic Ian Wright.
Ooh. Ian Wright, right.
Ian Wright, right. He was born on the 3rd of November, 1963.
Only 4 years before the summer of love.
Ian bloody Wright, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
An absolute joy to watch him play football. He had a brilliant interview recently, which we put up on the Ramble site, which was conducted on the GRM Daily. And he was very, very candid about his upbringing and how he got into football.
I was in tears.
It really
at
was.
At particular point.
It was indeed.
When they brought out his teacher, some old television footage of him being his old teacher, and I was in tears.
But I had no idea that
you were in ribbons.
I was in bits.
He was in pieces. You came from such a humble background, and that teacher you referenced was the only sort of guy who gave him a father figure or guidance.
That's right.
He didn't get on with his dad. His stepdad and all these kind of like.
His dad left when he was.
Been, yeah,
these, his dad was, left when he was in 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his stepdad wasn't a very nice man, as he put it. His mum was an alcoholic. He said, you know, he's a bit cocky when he was younger, but
he even did some time in prison, didn't he?
He did, yeah. That was a little bit later, yeah. But he had a love for football from a very young age, and he said it's what he lived for. But a really sad story. His stepdad, the room where the television was also, I think, the bed where the young lads would sleep, him and his brother. And when Match of the Day was on, his stepdad would make them turn away from the TV, and so they couldn't watch. And he said you could hear Match of the Day playing, and they just wanted to watch the football.
It's outrageous.
It's like the start of a superhero movie.
Yeah. Psychological abuse. abuse. It's absolutely.
It really is. And he said, you know, his stepdad was not a very nice
man. He was on the telly afterwards, screw you.
Well, that's what he says in this interview. He says, you know, when he got on Match of the Day, he was just saying to Des Lyon, mate, this is my Graceland. This is just incredible to be here, you know. But yeah, Mr. Pigden was the teacher in question, who was his first real positive role model in life. You know, he taught him how to... He said he took him out of the class pretty much and taught him how to read and write properly. And then when he heard he played football, he said... And he taught him a lot about the game, the importance to pass to your teammates. Because a lot of lads, you know, I mean, I'm sure a few of us have, you know, when you play football with guys who perhaps have a bit of a bad upbringing or whatever, you know, there's a tendency to give me the ball and they want to just do it all themselves and that kind of thing. Whereas this guy told him, you know, you've got to pass to your teammates. A lot of the important stuff in the game, it's, in, you know, good communication on the field, encourage others, you know. This guy was so important. And as you say, Pete, that bit in the interview where he thinks he's died and he meets him again when he's an Arsenal player at Highbury, he's doing a little thing. It's so emotional, really, isn't it? It really is. It's but
it made me, it just made me, when I saw it, it made me really sort of respect what he had achieved and where he had come from.
That's right.
Because I think there's so many of the things that maybe we have in our upbringing are just completely taken for granted. Just take them as rare. You don't think anything about them, you know. But obviously, a lot of people, and Ian Wright was one of these people, didn't have that.
It's obviously how he maintained that drive as well to get into football quite late as he did, to not give up on what his dream was and keep just trying, because so few players make it when they get into the game professionally at the age that he did. He was into his 20s.
No, but he was very close not to doing it. I mean, he went to, as you say, he was driving without any insurance and one thing or another, and he went to prison. I mean, it wasn't a bad guy, you know.
He didn't pay his fine, or he didn't know
exactly.
He didn't sort it out or whatever.
And he said, obviously, that was a big eye opener, as you could imagine. And when he was about 19, 20, he was working in sort of very undesirable jobs. His partner was pregnant. You know, they had a kid already with them. And he was going to loads of trials, and he was writing to all the clubs, and obviously very few got back to him. And he was going to trials from the age of sort of 12 to about 19 years old. It didn't happen, and he said that he would work constantly on either foot, work constantly on his heading, practice, he kept saying. And he had a trial at Brighton when he was 19, and he played down there for 6 weeks, played well, scored some goals, and didn't get in, and he just couldn't understand it. So he pretty much decided to give it up and concentrate on working, you know. And he'd got a better job, so moved away from, you know, cleaning whatever it was he was cleaning, but it was very undesirable. And a trial came along at Crystal Palace, and he decided against it. He said, I've had enough. I've had enough of the disappointments and whatnot.
Didn't he also say that he couldn't...
Well, it was a two-week trial.
Yeah, he couldn't take 2 weeks of work or something.
Exactly, because,
like,
well, to him, he'd moved on. He'd got a better job, a little bit more money
and
coming in.
And had he adopted Charlotte Phillips at that point?
Yes, he had,
so,
yeah.
So Bradley
was on the way, or maybe by that point he was born. So he's got a family, you know. You can't just nip off and do 2 weeks with and risk losing the job that you've worked really hard to get. Now, I didn't know this. I thought he played semi-pro. He never. He was playing Sunday League.
Yeah.
I thought he was semi-pro. Yeah. But he said his Sunday League manager said, look, you can't turn this opportunity down. And he said, well...
Imagine playing against Ian Wright in Sunday League. as a woeful Sunday League centre-back myself, I don't bear thinking about.
It's incredible, isn't it? So, his boss at the company where he was working at the job was a former pro himself, and he only played in the game a couple of years, but he said to Ian Wright, look, you've got to go to this trial. Professional football is the best thing you can do. And he said, 1 week we'll say you've got family problems, another week we'll say you're ill, but I'll do my damnedest and I'll keep this job for you, which was incredibly good of the guy to do.
And like Ian Wright himself said about that man himself, it could have gone the other way. He could have been so bitter about him not having
the
most illustrious footballing career, he could have just sort of went, no, you've got to stay here or whatever.
Indeed. And so he went to the trial, and as he put it, he said, well, I've got nothing to lose. I'll turn up, I'll play a bit of football for a couple of weeks, and, you know. And because of that, he expressed himself fully. And he just kicked ass, really, in the trial. There was one game where the Crystal Palace first team left back was playing, and he just said he just roasted him.
One of the best quotes is when he says, he plays, I've saw the interview, and he says, I stepped up from Sunday League football to this division, whatever they were at the time.
Division 2, the old Division 2, so one below the top tier.
I couldn't believe how slow they were. he was preparing himself for a massive step up.
Yeah.
He was going to just snaffle whatever goals he could.
Yeah.
And he said they couldn't believe how, and also how unprofessional they were.
Yeah, because there was one bloke he saw smoking.
Some of them wouldn't even stay late and practice their game.
That was very interesting, because Steve Coppell was in charge at the time. He couldn't believe who this guy was. He's like, he's just come off the streets almost. Yeah. You know, this is absolutely outrageous. So they said, you know, we want to keep you on.
And he said, I've got a family to feed. I've got a job. You know, you say, oh, well, I'll give you 6 weeks trial. That's no good to me,
mate. And to Coppola, it looked like he was playing hardball, but he was just genuinely awesome. Just going, look, I've got enough things in my life that I need
exactly,
to
be
responsible for.
And this is the thing, you know, we played a ramble match once, and there was a guy there who was fantastic. We won that game, I hasten to add. But he was a great player, and I spoke to him after, and I said, come on, surely you must have done something in the game. And he said, I had a trial at Reading, I had a trial here, there and everywhere, and he just said, life got in the way.
Mm. Yeah.
And for so many players, that must be the case. Ian Wright was very close.
It's easy to think that, you know, people just go into a club's academy, you make it at the academy, they make everything okay. It's not necessarily like that.
No.
You know, it's like in anything, you're trying to get set up with some sort of institution that can help you achieve your dream and do that. And there must be those players that fall through the cracks because you can't take 6 weeks off of work, or you can't even take 2 weeks off of work. It must happen all the time.
That's why when you have teams, semi-pro teams, you have players who are good enough to play semi-pro, but they can't do Tuesday night training, they can't do Thursday night training, they're not getting anything for it, get a tiny amount of money, if anything, just expenses, a lot of travelling involved. I think at that level a lot of them just roll play with their mates and have a good time.
It's a commitment that it's easy to misunderstand.
Well, Koppel, they agreed to take him for 3 months, and he said, okay, I'll do that. So 3 months, and he was pretty much 22 by then. He was in the early 20s. It was absolutely outrageous, you know. And again, Ian Wright, you think most players, we hear about them 17, 18, as you say, through the academy or whatever, 20, early 20s. But you're right, look, he was used to working a 7 till 7 kind of shift. He said, you turn up at training at 10:30, by 12:30, everyone had gone. And he said, this is just ridiculous. And so he said he'd get there at 9 in the morning and he'd leave about 4. The Stanage practicing all day, and he said he couldn't believe it. He said he'd got, you know,
he had as many balls as he could.
He was like, I had a load of footballs, I had goalkeepers. They were like, can I use this goalkeeper and take shots and practice? Yeah. And he's just like, he'd practice. And he said when the goalkeeper would go home, he'd stick a pole in the ground and all this. He couldn't believe his luck. Yeah. He's got all these facilities.
Like a playground for him. And he's got such an infectious personality.
And that
well. he must have relished that opportunity.
And that, when you know a bit about him with regards to all this kind of stuff, you think this is why he played the game in the way he did. You know, so we've got to move on to his playing. You know, and he did sign for Crystal Palace, and they signed him for a year into that 3 months. And of course, he formed a brilliant strike partnership with Mark Bright in the old second division, both amongst the goals, and they took Palace up into the top flight. Unfortunately, he picked up a few injuries in the 89-90 season, was out for a while, which was one of the main reasons why Bobby Robson didn't take him to Italia 90.
He had such bad injury sort of luck.
Yeah, he really
throughout
did,
England career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to his England career. But
he scored a lovely one for Palace against City at Main Road. Might have been the season they got promoted.
Yeah.
And the only reason I remember it is a nice finish, but because they won 2-0, and the first goal was a superb comedy own goal by a mulleted moustache defender for Man City. I can't remember it was.
Right.
Tony Coton came out. The guy's obviously not made a call. The guy just ignored him, just booted it in his own net. I think Wright celebrated anyway.
Wright was
in the general facility.
He loved the celebration, let's be honest. And then. I suppose his best moment for Crystal Palace when he came on against Manchester United in the 1990 FA Cup final, and United were 2-1 up, and Wright came on, and that first goal he scored kind of just summed him up, especially as a young striker. And you can just imagine when he's talking about, I can't believe how slow they were and all the rest of it. He comes on. Is it Pallister he roasts? He roasts two of them and slots in and just goes off, and he's loving it. Nobody could love it that moment more, you know. And then he gets the second, they go 3-2 up, and then unfortunately for them, Mark Hughes equalises, and they lost the replay 1-0.
That's heartbreaking. I mean, this very game, I think, has come up in profiles before, but it is one of those famously heartbreaking games, isn't it, when there were still replays for the cup final.
Yeah, that's right.
The idea of having a replay for a cup final is ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really does. Yeah. Everyone's got to take the Wednesday off work or whatever to get down there. But he scored 100 goals, more than 100 goals, sorry, for Crystal Palace, and is regarded as one of the club's greatest ever players. And he was signed by Arsenal in 1991 for £2.5 million. He was 28.
What an impact.
28.
That's the amount of goals that man scored for Arsenal.
Well, he was Arsenal's all-time top scorer until Thierry Henry came along. It's absolutely incredible.
It's the most extraordinary fact of his career, in my view.
I think so.
28 years old. Players are expected to be sort of, these days, probably a little bit past their peak by then.
But he still had time to play for West Ham at the end.
He always squeezed that in me.
The thing, obviously I support Arsenal, as anyone that listens to the show will know, but like, I cannot tell you how much I loved Ian Wright.
But wasn't there a protest when they signed him?
There was.
Fans didn't want him.
He said that. A lot of people going, why are we signing this guy? You know, he's not good enough. They had Alan Smith, the two-time Golden Boot winner. Kevin Campbell.
Rocky as well.
Rocky, David Rocastle. You know, Merson and Limpar were forward-thinking players as well.
And what was lovely as well is David Rocastle grew up in the same area. They were mates, you know.
Yeah, they're on the same estate.
I think they might have been. Yeah,
it's like Rycard and Hullet.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Wasn't he golden boot scorer in his first season?
First season, I think, for Arsenal. Yeah, he scored on his debut.
Yeah,
he got a hat trick in his league debut.
He also scored.
That'll shut him up.
He scored on his home debut as well.
Yeah.
Oh, you want me in now, do you?
You want these goals?
Yeah. He was Arsenal's top goal scorer for 6 years in a row, and it just he became Arsenal. He epitomised them in a way that, you know, few players have since, you know.
He is the ultimate fans footballer.
He's a fan.
Yeah,
he's playing.
He's us on the pitch. Do you know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So a lot of people, kids growing up now, maybe just starting to get into football and stuff, won't really know that Wright was such a good football player. Because he knows media personality.
Of course.
Profile.
But what I think was great with Ian Wright, you know, that nowadays there's a lot of talk about wages, there's a lot of talk about this and that. The enthusiasm and the love he had for the game and the way he played it, every goal he scored, he just absolutely loved it. He would, you know, people go on about, oh, the passion of some players and do they care and all these kind of questions. Ian Wright, and a great rapport with the fans, couldn't get enough of playing football.
No. Yeah, but he sort of had this huge enthusiasm for life itself.
Yeah.
Football was just his sort of conduit for that. And you can see how much work he put into his game as well.
Because
it's easy to forget that he would score all different kinds of goals.
Oh my goodness,
he would score dinks, chips, just like, he was a real poacher.
Explosive.
As well. You wouldn't want to drop the ball near Ian Wright because he would just bury it. He was, as I say, top scorer for Arsenal 6 years in a row. I think he didn't score under 23 goals for
five or six years.
Longer than that. Right. I think at any point at Arsenal, actually.
In the 92 season when he signed for them, when Arsenal beat Liverpool 4-0, he scored two. He completely roasted them. The thing is, he kept breaking the offside trap. Because I was just trying to remember if he was top scorer that season or not, but I remember that game.
And I think he was.
He kept breaking the offside trap so often. Like, by the middle of the second half, it's just embarrassing. We're sort of pleading with the Liverpool defence to do something different.
I just love the way he played, you know, and okay, he was a bit of a hothead as well. We'll move on to bits and pieces.
But that's part of him.
Yeah, but what
apparently he would wind up defenders like literally no one else. He was legendary for
And
it.
Sol Campbell was the only one he couldn't get, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. I think Sol Campbell was just...
Oh, this links in nicely.
Well, you know, a fellow Dwoffer. but I just, you know, the way he played and so on, it was almost like, you know, managers. You could just imagine Alex Ferguson as well. Who is he? He shouldn't be playing. That's just he's breaking tradition. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not the etiquette. You know, just running around, just smiling away.
You
every goal
about,
he's orchestrating the fans.
You talk about him being loving the game so much. Apparently, like, he used to, when it came up for contract renewal time at Arsenal, apparently he used to go in and sign it.
He
wasn't bothered. He's going
to sign that's it. It. He's one of those guys that would just think to himself, I'm getting paid to do this. You know.
Well, because he'd lived the alternative.
Exactly.
You know,
what the alternative was. Yeah. I always say, with half of these footballers, you know, when they're 5 years, 6 years into their professional career, for a month, take them out for a month, get them to temp in an office or on a building site or something, they'd certainly come back a lot.
Get Stuart Peter taking doing some bit of lecky work.
He probably still does that.
David Batty used to do that, apparently. He used to,
Wright scored a brilliant goal, and I remember it because it was against Southampton. In that season as well, where it's an amazing bit of goalkeeping from David Seaman. Ball come over from a free kick or something, or a corner. Looks like it's going out of play. Mm. Seaman with one hand keeps it in, and in one movement throws it out to Ian Wright on the left wing. Mm. He's probably in the left back position, and he absolutely blitzes it. It's like everyone else is in slow motion, and he smashes it in. It's an incredible goal.
One of my favourite Ian Wright goals against Everton, where he dinks it past, he sort of flicks it past the defender one way, then flicks it past him another way, and just lobs Neville Southall.
Yeah. He was brilliant.
He'll pay for that.
He was brilliant with the ball in the air.
Well,
if he was in the box and the ball was in the box, however those two were in relation to each other, you're in danger.
But he was so unorthodox.
Yeah.
So who is this guy?
Why is he laughing? Why is he always laughing? which end was it? Is it the clock end where it always seemed like the punters were always on top of it.
Highbury.
And he was forever scoring just near that big effing scoreboard.
And he's sort of kind of bridged the gap between the Graham and Wenger eras as well, because he was only there briefly under Wenger.
He didn't like...
The time he met Bergkamp's a classic story as well, wasn't it?
What was that one?
Do you know that story where Ian Wright, he didn't know that Bergkamp had signed for Arsenal.
Yeah.
And Ian Wright was just driving around. It wasn't even anywhere near Arsenal, apparently.
Right.
And he was just driving around. He got into a petrol station and he was waiting there for ages because there was this car in front of him and the petrol cap was on the wrong side.
And that's right.
And he starts... He thinks, I want to get out in a minute. And he gets out and he gets out to try and say to him... Well, he says, I think, oh, I got us trying to help him, but probably to give him a bit of an earful. Yeah. And it was Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And he said, what are you doing here? He goes, I've just signed for Arsenal. Apparently Wright said, I went back, when he found out Bergkamp just signed, he went back into his car, waiting for Bergkamp to drive off, and just sort of went, yes! banging the steering wheel stuff. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, that's guaranteed me an extra 10 goals this season.
He also muck up when he thought he had broken the record.
He did, yes.
Yeah, that's his last season.
Brought a T-shirt out of the wrong
time. One thing we've got to say in his first season at Arsenal, when so much to say, when the fans were moaning, he pipped Gary Lineker to the league's Golden Boot Award. Mm. His first season, superb. Also, he missed out on Euro 92. Graham Taylor didn't call him up, which is quite an odd one.
Yeah, well, some of the players that were picked over him were ridiculous. Mm. David Hurst.
was David Hurst in the squad?
Brian Dean. No, I mean players.
Brian Dean,
goal
machine. Brian Dean, have a bit of respect.
Brian Dean, like players that had been picked over him throughout the season.
Okay, right. He won a couple of trophies at Arsenal in 93, League Cup and FA Cup. 94, of course, England didn't qualify for the World Cup.
Because I didn't pick Ian Wright.
he did his damnedest against San Marino, didn't he?
That's true.
He scored four in that game.
Alan Smith was getting a nod ahead of him a lot as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. Euro 96, when that came around, to be fair, you had Cheer and Sheringham, Les Ferdinand and Robbie Fowler.
Euro 96, you could argue, was a good squad. I mean, the time between like about 91, 92 and through to about 95.
Yeah.
Was probably quite.
But do you know what?
Yeah, Matt Letizia on the on the Letiz, fringes as well.
Him and Letiz. That would have been a great partnership.
He's incredibly unlucky with his England career, though.
Very unlucky. I mean, France 98, he would have gone.
But he got injured.
However, of all these tournaments, the one he went to, Le Tournoi, they won. Come on, Monks, I think he scored against Italy. Yeah. I loved it.
It's funny to think about the tournoi that until we won it, it wasn't really seen as a big one.
It's like the World Cup.
Yeah, it's true. I don't think it was one.
We're doing this one next year? Well, probably not going to, but that's annoying.
Well, yeah, and that night in Rome when England drew 0-0 with Italy and he hit the post in injury time. Mm-hmm. But he said, like, I just remember him after the game. No one could have been happier than Ian Wright, you know.
I can remember that was an England game, I forget which one it was, but he had to come off injured and the camera scanned across the bench just in the middle of the second half or whatever. And Ian Wright wasn't on the bench. Oh, he's going to get treatment or whatever. He's down on the sidelines with his big jacket on, cheering the England
fans.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't gloss over his running battle with Peter Schmeichel.
No.
Can we?
No. Never scored against him, did he?
No, he never. And Schmeichel never scored against him.
Yes,
he never. So he didn't get one over him. I remember that game at Highbury where there's a bit of previous in one of the games and that game and the first big challenge they both went into where neither was hurt, actually the ball burst.
It's just the fury.
Bloody hell,
I love the idea of like a 40-year-old listening to this now. What, that actually happened?
It really did
actually as well. I love the idea,
balls were burstier back then.
That's absolutely outrageous.
The rage.
I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, Luke. I do hope, because a lot of people know Wright from his subsequent TV work, as you say, but I know we have a lot of younger listeners and I wonder how they view him, right? And if they understand how good
well.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But how what a varied player and what a brilliant character and just what a joy he was.
Really? I mean, we could do with another Ian Wright, really, in the league, I think, because it's just, he was fantastic. So the battle with Peter Schmeichel. Fortunately, later on, they became mates and whatnot. On the match of the day sofa.
There was quite a nasty undertone to it, wasn't there?
There was
allegations
there
of racism and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so it was good.
But Wright was that type of player, although that type of guy, really, from his background and all the rest of it. He said, you know, if someone gives me something, I'll give it back. Mm-hmm. And
I'll burst the ball.
But 97, 98 was his last season for Arsenal, where he won the title, won the league title, and got the Arsenal's all-time record.
Well, that incident basically summed up his entire career in one game, basically. Mm. Scored the 178th goal, thought he'd broken the record, pulled a T-shirt out saying 179, just done it.
Yeah.
So that shows like his bit of wackiness of his character, and then just scored a tap in and did it anyway. In the same game. Because he waited for ages before that.
Yeah, he went through a bit of a drought.
Yeah, but then everyone was waiting for it. Like,
yeah.
It was three or four goal games where he didn't score.
Yeah.
And then there was like an international break. and you were sort of thinking, well, he's not getting any younger. You know,
yeah. He was 34.
He was 46 when he signed.
But he kept going for some time.
But
after
for a guy to become Arsenal's all-time record goal scorer, a club like Arsenal, incredible history. And okay, Thierry Henry went on to break that. But he, you know, he started playing.
It took Thierry Henry to break it.
It did, it's exactly.
And take Thierry Henry to break that.
To be fair, as well, he was really good friends with Thierry Henry and apparently helped him settle in quite a lot. And I think Ian Wright was there when Henry broke the record, and you could see he was just happy for his mate as well.
Of course, of course. He loved the club, you know. But 28 years old, he signed for that club and broke their all-time goal scoring record. Just different class, absolutely different class. And there was a lovely image, wasn't there, when Tony Adams burst through against Everton to score that famous fourth goal, and Wright's just like clinging onto his back.
Sums it all up.
Yeah. Oh dear,
you've got to talk about his single.
Do we have to talk about his single?
He released a single, Do the Right Thing. Absolute shit.
We nearly got over the finish line.
One of the best YouTube comments ever, isn't it? The most liked comment on his single, right, is worst song of all time, and the singing is fucking bollocks.
What I would argue is
it was
that
Andy Cole.
At least he was singing.
Well, he was actually asked, was your song better than Andy Cole's? And he went, yes, but the less said about the two, the better, to be fair.
I think Andy Cole's is better.
Andy Cole's in an open top car, isn't he? Like going down the strip in Las
Outstanding.
Vegas.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
It is outstanding. We could talk so much more about Ian Wright, but we're going to have to sort of gloss over the end of his career. He went to West Ham for a season and then briefer spells at Nottingham Forest, Celtic, and a handful of games up in Scotland. Finished at Burnley. But, you know, Crystal Palace and Arsenal.
Did he finish at Burnley around the same time Gascoigne went to Burnley? Because Gascoigne also ended his career at Burnley.
I hope not.
I saw him play for Burnley as well.
Because he went on for a couple of years after he left West Ham, didn't he? He was sort of just not.
He went to Celtic?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And since then, you know, the media career is all for everybody to see. But what I would say is actually the Football Behind Bars TV show he did was brilliant, actually. And that is something that I think that hopefully they'll roll out in juvenile prisons around the country, because that would make a difference. And he was brilliant on that, I really thought.
But it's his footballing career that he should be remembered for.
I've sort of worked with him a couple of times on a couple of radio shows and stuff, and the one thing that strikes me is that he's just a man with a proper heart. He loves football. Mm. He's such a warm man. He was up for doing I think he was giving away the Ballon d'Or, but he was actually asked to do it by Sepp, and then Sepp came out and said something about racism isn't that bad, or something about racism, I think. And he actually said he didn't want to do it, and it got given to somebody else.
I deserve a lot of credit for that. I think
fair play.
He hit Sepp, so what can you
that's
enough to get him in. You should have just said that at the top.
But he voted Arsenal's fourth greatest player ever.
Player of the century for Palace as well, wasn't he? He got voted really high up in a poll for Palace fans.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that GRM Daily interview is worth checking out. From nothing to something sums it up with Ian Wright. Marvellous to watch, and a professional footballer who loved the game. And in he comes, the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. Ian Wright, ladies and gentlemen. Well, that's the end of the show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the Twitter is @footballramble. What's going on at the website, Lukey?
As Jim mentioned at the sort of top of the show, is a little compilation of the best dives or the funniest dives we could find. Regular in-depth articles on the beautiful game, as well as some more funny and sort of entertaining ones. There's a chat forum.
Videos?
There's videos.
About Ian Wright things up there?
Yeah, the Ian Wright interview we've referenced quite a lot on the profiles in there. There's a couple of new t-shirts. You can get a 50-1 t-shirt now.
Imagine that. Mm.
So yeah, do check it out, thefootballramble.com.
There you go. Right, say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Luke.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me, you little buttercups.
I say hello to Detective Gordon Lukehart of the Los Angeles City Sheriff Office.
You just have.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you want to expand on that further? Or?
No.
Give him a howdy.
Howdy.
He knows who he is. He knows who he is.
Howdy, Detective.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.